Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Today is Bullies to Buddies Day. And, you know, I know I've said this before, but like most things that I really appreciate, I can be very repetitive. Bullying is a major part of everybody's life. There isn't anything that you can't compare to some type of bullying. I don't like the terminology because, like I said months ago, when you hear the name or hear the word bully, you think of a big, dumb kid who's going around picking on everybody because he's bigger than they are, meaner than they are, etc. That's really not a true personification. It's really a lot of people, and a lot of them are beautiful, smart, articulate, and powerful. We get bullied by people who are our commodities today. If you can't pay your FPNL bill, they'll work with you a little bit. I will say that. Shelley and I have talked about that before as well. But you better figure out a way to pay your FPNL bill or you're not going to have any electricity. Now, is that bullying? I guess it's what you would call necessary bullying. Because I also know something else about us as a people. We'll slide on anything we can slide with, pretty much, especially if we're overwhelmed. Not everybody. I know a lot of people who are so on top of their game and never forget anything, and everything is paid the day it comes in the mail, and every registration is taken care of, 10 days ahead of time, and I wish I was one of those people. I'm not. I've always admired those people because I always thought their world was a lot less worrisome than mine because they take care of things as they come along. But that's a whole other story. The deal that I'm talking about today, again, is bullying. And we've seen a lot of it. We've heard a lot of it. Big thing on TV all morning long about the Ravens star Ray Rice, who they have video of him abusing his wife on an elevator. And nobody did anything about it. That's not okay. And that, of course, surpasses the word bully to, you know, a crime. We've talked about that at length as well. I'm going to bring Shell in because I want to I have a couple new things that came to me that I think that we can appreciate as well as the golden rule, which Izzy has taught us in our Bullies to Buddies workbook. Good morning, Shell.
Good morning, Rain. How are you?
I'm good, honey. How are you?
Doing pretty good.
That's good. I got this... This was posted by one of my regulars, Linda and Denny, and most of the time these bullying programs that are brought to us through our government, our legislature, things like that, are usually rules, and we've talked about that with Izzy, that rules usually don't work and there's nobody to make sure that the rules are followed. You can't ask in a school, we'll use that as the choice place, of course, for most of the bullying. We all know that it's mostly in the home, and in the home there's nobody to watch the rules either if the people that are committing the bullying are in charge. So it's kind of an act of futility. However, this came to me. It's called stopbullying.gov. It's a website. I kind of like it because it talks about assessing and surveying, which is what we talked about yesterday with Danny.
Right.
I thought the connection was interesting, you know, to see when the first word I read was assess bullying, it got my attention. Because I think that's also one of our issues, because we have that persona in our heads. You and I have talked about this 100 times. We think about the fact that it's a bigger guy being mean to everybody, or bigger girl being mean to everybody, and probably somebody's being mean to them in another arena. So we get the cycle of it. But, you know, years ago when I was working and training people and everything, I'd say, you know, before you can initiate any kind of new guidelines, you have to see what's being done now. You have to observe and see what's working and what isn't working. If it's not broken, why are you trying to fix it? If it is broken, then the assessment is what's going to tell you that. So I like this. It says, the first page says assessments such as surveys can help schools determine the frequency and locations of bullying behavior. Okay, now we've talked about that too, right? How there are specific places in a school where most of the bullying takes place.
Mm-hmm.
What do we got? We got school buses, for sure. We've seen several videos of school bus bullying or abuse. The bus stop, right? The bathrooms.
Right.
And the lunchroom, even though lunchroom has almost always got adults in there, but a lot of times they aren't teachers. A lot of times in middle school and in elementary school, they're parents who are volunteering to be like the, what's the name they call them? Somebody that
monitor.
A monitor, right. Okay. So they have all those places. So that's an important tool to have. Knowing what's going on can help the school staff select appropriate prevention and response strategies. Assessments involve asking school or community members, including students, about their experiences and thoughts related to bullying. An assessment is planned, purposeful, and uses research tools. Know what's going on. Adults underestimate the rates of bullying because kids rarely report it, and it often happens when adults aren't around. Amen. Assessing bullying through anonymous surveys can provide a clear picture of what is going on. And then you would target some efforts. Understanding trends and types of bullying in your school can help you plan bullying prevention and intervention efforts. Can you think of something that second bullet point, what we can relate that to, that second bullet point? Target efforts, understanding trends and types of bullying in your school can help you plan bullying prevention and intervention efforts. What comes to your mind when you, if somebody said, okay, what are you going to do about this? What do you think they're trying to tell us there, how to handle something?
Well, I think I don't know, it's a little overbroad for me. I'm not getting one thing from that.
Mm-hmm.
But the main thing is the first one, the assessment, is that first you have to find out what happened before you can move forward to figure out what to do about it.
Mm-hmm. So let's say you do an assessment and you find out that maybe this is an old-fashioned school like the ones that are up north in New York City or in Jersey, and they have sometimes 3 and 4 floors for the kids to go to. And maybe there's a bathroom up on the top floor that's at the corner of the hall, and the only thing else that's on the top floor is maybe the shop, you know, the wood shop or something like that, and maybe an art class. So hardly ever but any... Nobody is ever monitoring or keeping an eye on that bathroom. So when you do your assessment, you find out a lot of the altercations have taken place in that bathroom. So that helps you a lot, right?
Of course. Yep.
Because now you can really move forward and do something at that bathroom instead of making a teacher or a monitor or somebody watch all 20 bathrooms in a big school, in a public school system, you know where the issues are happening. It's the one that's away from everybody, which makes sense.
Makes sense, of course.
So,
they know that it's the one that's not monitored and that there's never really any supervision there.
Right, right. So can't you see that really making a difference if the assessment is done by somebody who's really paying attention? And then it says, measure results. The only way to know if your prevention and intervention efforts are working is to measure them over time. So, again, that means somebody has to be talking. Somebody has to be being honest. Somebody has to share, maybe without consequence and maybe without making it publicly known that Rini has told everybody that every day at lunchtime, Shelley walks by her and hits her in the head with her food tray, right? Nobody else is paying any attention. She just knows that she did it to her, and if she doesn't say anything, it goes undone forever. What's that doing to her head? Not the bump, but the, you know, just the fact that it's being done and nobody, first of all, you think nobody cares, and second of all, you think nobody else is paying attention. So if Rini doesn't report that, what are they going to do about something like that? Any ideas?
Exactly. Well, I think on something like that, there's two things going on here. First of all, getting the statistics over time, I think has to be done through surveys, because just like with all other crimes in the United States, a lot of domestic violence and things like that goes unreported. So they even say a lot of times that rape statistics and domestic violence statistics, they're only coming up with those numbers based on what's reported, but there's a lot more that never goes reported. So the same thing happens with bullying at schools. You know, if they want to have some sort of a chart to see that what they're putting into motion is working, they have to have a reliable way of collecting the statistics, and you have to take into account all the bullying that goes unreported. So the easiest way to do this is to do surveys at the beginning of the year, so that kids are just answering questions honestly. You know, their information isn't going anywhere, so it can't get them in trouble. And then to do it quarterly, you know, every time the report card comes out, do another survey and say, as the year goes on, have you noticed more bullying, less bullying? Have you been the victim? Blah, 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 stuff like that. And then see if those responses change as the year goes on. And then let the kids comment. Is there an area in the school that you're seeing this? And that kind of stuff. And hopefully the majority of the kids, because it's being done in a closed survey type of thing, so that everybody's filling them out, hopefully you would get more honest answers in a situation like that. And then you can truly assess whether or not what you're doing is improving. And sometimes hearing from the kids what the issues are, sometimes kids can come up with their own recommendations. So I think it's important, especially when you're getting with teenagers, maybe the younger children won't, but when you're getting into the teenagers, a lot of times they have pretty decent ideas of what may fix a problem and what may mm-hmm. make a problem worse. So giving them the ability to put a couple of comments down on this survey, you know, might be very enlightening to the powers that be.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's everything. Everything you just said, that's everything for me. Because I think, again, one of our biggest issues is that none of us listen. We start hearing us. I'm guilty of that all the time, and it's what I want to do the most is hear what people say to me. And
I
yet
know.
They
we
say
all go
one thing
it.
That... Yeah, it catches my attention, and then I drift off into thinking about what they just said and realized I missed the last 3 minutes of the rest of their conversation. So it's you have to work it, listening.
Right.
Right?
Right.
What
you were saying before about, you know, when we talk about bullying and that it's really pervasive in society, it doesn't just happen, you know, like you said, it's not just the big guy picking on all the little guys because he can. Sometimes it's the beautiful cheerleader picking on the pretty girl, you know, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's businesses. But when it comes to businesses, you gave one example, and I agree with you partially on that. You know, when you're talking about monopolies, when you're talking about FP&L, you know, keeping your electric on,
mm-hmm.
If they shut your electric off because you haven't paid, that's not really bullying because there's a contractual thing going there. But what is bullying?
I get.
But what is bullying is sometimes how the representative that you're speaking to handles the
mm-hmm.
call. And a perfect example mm-hmm. is that when I was going through my rough times a few years ago, right after I had lost my job up north, I was very respectful. I would call people. I would stay in touch with them. And for the most part, the people I was talking to were very, very polite, very understanding. You know, they say, well, you know, a lot of people are losing their jobs. We'll work with you as best as we can. But I did have one individual that was so abusive on the phone to me, was treating me like I was a slacker, like I was lazy. I've worked my entire life since I was 8 years old. I actually started working in my father's garage every summer. I never got summers off, you know, so I've been working literally my entire life. And for this woman to talk to me like I was lazy and all this and all that, and I was offended, and I told her, I said, you don't know who I am. You have no right talking to me like that. I said, I want somebody else on the phone, and I want them on the phone now. And her supervisor got on the phone, and I put in a formal complaint because he helped. That was the whole point of my call. I wasn't saying I was never going to pay the bill. I needed some sort of a payment plan. I needed them to work with me, and this guy did. And I said, she should not be speaking to people on the phone because I said all mm-hmm. she was going to do is cause grief for me, and I said, and I'm trying to pay this bill. So she was a bully, all right? So it's not
mm-hmm.
it's not the actions of a contractual agreement that is the bullying aspect.
Absolutely. That's right. That's right. You're right.
It's how the people that are in power treat you. She was bullying me for no reason. I was trying to do the responsible thing, and she was treating me like I was less than a good person, and I was very offended by it. And because I insisted, but because I didn't respond to that and allow myself to be bullied, see, now other people might have spoken to this woman and been so ashamed or so embarrassed, they would have hung up the phone, and then all this other nonsense would have happened to them. I was insulted by her, and instead of allowing myself to be bullied, I gave it back to her. And I said, I am not going to tolerate the way you're speaking to me. Get somebody else on the phone. And she did, you know, and then it worked out. But how many people did she speak to that same day that were bullied by her, that succumbed to it and ended up having something bad happen to them, you know?
Well, that's the whole point. The end of the story is what makes the difference. You are a fighter. We've talked about this before. You
mm-hmm.
don't lay down on the floor and let people walk all over you. But there are people that are. And you're right. I'm sorry if people misunderstood that I think that you're being bullied because you have to pay a bill. I don't mean that. I mean about your treatment in regard to not being able to take care of what you know are your responsibilities because of a situation. Everybody in the last 10 years, I maybe have, in all the group of friends I have, I maybe have 10 that haven't struggled in the last 10 years, maybe 10. And I have a very, very large group of friends. I know people who have been homeless for the first times in their lives. I've known people who have taken jobs and traveled across country to take a job, and the job has fallen through. And then they're, you know, they've spent all the money to get where they're going. They have a family. I mean, it's horrendous, the things that have happened to people about money. So when you call and you talk to somebody, that's what you should get. You don't, they're not going to say to you, oh, don't worry, Rini, you don't have to pay your FP&L. You've had a terrible time, and we feel sorry for you, so you don't have to pay it. I don't mean that. I wish that would happen. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about we have somebody who can just work on this with you and work out a payment plan so your power doesn't have to be turned off. Isn't that what
right.
they're supposed to be doing?
I still speaking to you with a level of respect because everybody
right.
happen to them. Sometimes people get sick, and all of a sudden now they can't pay their regular bills because they're paying for medicine and stuff like that. You know, things happen to people. It doesn't mean you're irresponsible. And for the person at the other end of the phone to make assumptions about your character is not only inappropriate, but it is a form of bullying, and they should be trained not to do that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And in regard to that, like I have mentioned so many times before, is, you know, there are organizations. I don't know what made me think of FPNL, because FPNL is like one of the only real conglomerates there is today, because there's all kinds of phone companies. There used to be just one. There's all kinds of TV, cable people there. So there's a little bit of, service, because if they don't take care of you, you can go to somebody else. Electricity is another story, so that's probably why I went to them. But I do believe, you know, that it's supposed to be about looking out for each other. And I've mentioned before about the family that I met many years ago who actually does car washes, bake sales, white elephant sales, all these kind of things, garage sales with their neighbors, and raises money to pay the electric bill, the other utility bills that are in arrears for people who have cancer. Now, when I met that family, I was like, how'd you even think of that? And they were like, because it happened to us. And I said, wow. So there is stuff out there, and we are a wonderful people. I just think to myself, you know, that when you talk about bullying, it comes in so many different shapes and forms and disguises that I think you can't stop something until you really recognize it and understand it. It can't, you know, it won't work to try to stop it, because you're not looking for all the real signs of that kind of thing. So I like how they go on. Measure the results, which we talked about, so that means somebody's got to talk. And the assessment can explore frequency and types of bullying, adult and peer response, locations including hotspots, like we talked about the bathroom upstairs, staff perceptions and attitudes about bullying. Now, that's a biggie, because you really have to understand the people that you have doing that job, and you have to be kind of acutely aware of what kind of personalities they have, aspects of the school or community that may support or help stop it, which is also good. You have a lot of your organizations, your church groups, your youth church groups, things like that, that spend a lot of time working with this. The student perception of safety and the climate of your school. Now, that's the last one, but that's a biggie, don't you think? The climate of your school, in other words, where it is, what kind of students are there, if it's,
scholarly, you know, kids are there, they're orderly, you see they're having a good time, and other schools are like a war zone, for God's sake. And it's like you sit back, and I've seen some of these schools, and it's like you wonder how the kids even have the nerve to get up and go to school every day with what they have to deal with.
Yeah. And we've, on the show a few times, we had a couple teachers, and we had a lady who wrote a bunch of children's books, and she was spending time reading her books in Belgrade. And she talked about issues at some of the Belgrade schools. And that's the kind of atmosphere I think that they're talking about. I think that they're talking about places where parents are often MIA and things like that. We know that all exists out there, but I don't want to talk about that today. I'd like to talk about some good ideas to help things get better. But administer the survey. And the school staff are best equipped to judge how to carry out a survey at a school, but these tips can help. Administer surveys early in the school year. That, of course, makes sense. Schedule surveys after students are settled in a routine and there is still time to use the findings in the school year's prevention efforts. assess at least once every school year. Some schools like to survey students at the start and at the end of the school year to track progress and plan activities for the following year. That, of course, makes the most sense to me. Decide which students will be surveyed to ensure statistically significant results. Schools may choose school-wide surveys or surveys of specific grades. Plan to administer the survey when all students can take it at once. This will reduce the chance that they will discuss it and affect each other's answers. Now, that bullet point is real important. And
I like that one.
Me too, because of social media.
The only thing I don't agree with is the frequency. I think it should be done at the beginning of the year and mid-year. What's the point of doing it at the end of the year? Any corrective action that could have been taken, you know, it's already done. I think it should be in the beginning of the year and mid-year, not at the end of the year.
That's a good point, honey.
The rest of it.
That's a very, very good point. And I think that you're right, because especially if it's working pretty good, but there's a couple little nicks in the program, then you could fix them. That's a big, big valid point. Protect student privacy. Oh, my God. Protect everybody's privacy. You know, many surveys are subject to the Protection of Pupil Rights Amendment. That's called the PPRA, Protection of Pupil Rights Amendment, and the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, which is FERPA, F-E-R-P-A, assure students that their responses will be kept confidential and that their answers can't be tracked back to them. Analyze and distribute findings. Make sure you continue to protect students' privacy by ensuring that no personally identifiable information is accessible. Consider how the survey results will be shared with teachers, parents, and students. And then make sure that you're prepared to respond to the results of the survey. Have a clear plan for prevention and intervention in place or in development. Now, all of this, for me, when I read this whole thing, could be the first step to the golden rule, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean,
you know what I'm saying? I mean,
what is the first rule of the golden rule?
Do unto others as you would have them do unto you is the golden rule. The golden rule that Izzy Kalman has taught us is about many times turning the other cheek and making a friend instead of a foe. He talks completely about teaching our children how to be socially adept.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, if you're at a dinner party and it's a fancy soiree and you're 40 years old, you're a lawyer, you've etched out a nice little career for yourself, you're a female, and you walk into a dinner party and somebody walks up to you and very quietly says to you, you know, I don't know where you bought that dress, but I saw it at Walmart for $10.95, so I don't know who you think you're fooling, or something along those lines. Are you going to turn around and smack the hell out of that person? No. You're going to look at them and smile and say, how did you know? I found this at Walmart. Isn't this a great bargain? What does that do to that person's
bitchiness, right? Yeah, that's what you should say, something like that, you know.
Exactly.
But a lot of people, yeah, a lot of people would get offended and all bent out of shape, and really the best thing to do is just react in a way that you think that they were, you know, that they were like-minded with you, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's what Izzy tries to teach us to teach
somebody who's trying
kids
to insult you.
Mm-hmm. I'll never forget. I took drama in school, and I did a commercial about MetroCow, and I talked about being in a store and having the MetroCow in my hand, and the cashier said, you're on a diet. I said, I need to be on a diet? And she looked at me totally shocked. She looked at it was back in those days it was called MetroCal, and it was like a drink that you drank instead of having a meal, you know, but in my little skit I called it MetroCal. And but in my skit, I said, oh, I have a weight problem. And she goes, well, why are you buying that? I said, I just like it. And the whole class just laughed and thought it was very funny. But I thought to myself, one can of that, and yes, even in high school, I was a big girl. I wasn't fat like I am now, but I was a big girl. But I wouldn't have said I had a weight problem. I was very athletic. I, you know, swam, ran, played ball, did everything.
Right.
But I wanted to show my class, even at the age of 14, that people make assumptions visually.
Right, exactly.
And everybody thought it was very funny. But that's the whole point, you know, with what Issy teaches us. He wants you to turn the tables, you know, and do it with the kind of finesse that makes people think, well, you know, this isn't going to be any fun, or perhaps makes you the friend of a lifetime.
That's
right?
Right. And, you know, the funny part about it is what you're talking about, you and I both do. I've had people say to me mm-hmm. where I knew that they were trying to be insulting or degrading, but because I have a certain amount of self-control and I don't respond when people are trying to be mean to me because I like having the upper hand, and when you react out of anger, you've lost control, you know. So I'll turn around and I'll go along with them. Like, I'll agree with them, and I'll say, oh, yeah, you know, isn't that goofy? Or, oh, yeah, or like that. Or I'll say, what a great bargain or something like that. And it completely disarms them. Somebody is trying to be mean to you and embarrass you or hurt your feelings, and then you respond like you think that they're on your side and they're just, like kind of connecting with you. It completely confuses them. And it's kind of fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps you in
mm-hmm.
control. And it's actually a nice way to have the whole thing because there's no, you know, your blood pressure doesn't go up. Nobody gets angry. Nobody starts yelling. And the person, 9 times out of 10, will either then continue and now they feel compelled to be nice to you because you just act like you thought they were being nice, or they'll just excuse themselves and leave. Either way, it's fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would agree with totally. And I also think that it lightens you, you know, it makes you don't want, we've talked about this in the very beginning of the show. I shared with everybody that it's not easy for me to be mean and vindictive. I usually walk away feeling worse than whoever I've just unloaded on because my stomach hurts. I have to deal with the rest of the day of losing my temper and not being in control. I don't like it.
Right.
And but I also don't like to be treated without respect. That's probably when I lose my cool the most frequently. But don't you agree that the things that Issy has taught us would help this idea that they've come up with to survey and to analyze and to really see where the issues are? And then if they talk to kids about dealing with the minor infractions that take place on a daily basis between people, whether they're 12 or 22 or 62, should be treated with a, don't give it any power. Really,
right.
Don't give it any power. And that's
that's a very valid point. They can't just do the surveys and then leave the kids out there to, you know, to do whatever they're going to do. There has to be some sort of a proactive assembly then at the same time. You know, assess where the kids' heads are at right now. Then have an assembly to specifically address some of the results that came out and give kids some of the pointers to maybe prevent a lot of bullying. You're never going to be able to get rid of it 100% because there's always these kids that fall outside of the general characteristics, okay? You have a bully who's not a bully, who's really a sociopath. That's different.
Mm-hmm.
A true sociopath is not going to fall in line. But somebody who's a bully because maybe they're having a bad time at home and they're just taking it out on their classmates or something, that type of person can be turned around, can be helped, you know. So it all, you know, so that's what I'm saying. So for the most part, an assembly to help kids to deal with bullying to teach kids how to kind of like, you know, a lot of what Izzy talks about and being more proactive and not allowing the hurtful things that somebody says to them to identify them or to destroy them, and just kind of like come back, have a little bit lighter attitude towards criticisms, you know. And if you do have some abuse that somebody's picking on you about, be okay with it. You know, you're not done yet. If you're chubby now, that doesn't mean you're still going to be chubby. I mean, my nephew was really, really chubby at one point in his childhood, and in 1 year he grew like 3 inches and he became very lean, you know. So just because somebody looks a particular way doesn't even mean they're
That's what I'm hoping for, to get a lot taller. That's exactly what I'm hoping for, to get a lot taller.
Right, different, right?
Yeah, I'm waiting for that big spurt.
You know, so, you know,
if I'm 7 foot tall, I'll be svelte.
Right, exactly, you know. You know, but that's the point, you know, sometimes, and it would be good for people in the assembly to talk about things to help kids at the beginning of the year to have a different mindset and to know that they have recourse within themselves. Empowering the students to know that they have recourse within themselves by making different choices and different reactions would do a lot to stay off most of the bullying, and then the residual bullying that's left over is going to be the one that's actually the more problematic in nature.
Well, and that's one of Izzy's favorite lines. You know, you say, Shelley just said something mean to me about my hair, and or the way I smell or something like that, and he says, you know, is it true?
Yeah, and right.
you say no, and then what are you giving it any credence for then?
Yeah, what do you care?
And,
right.
Yeah, so the only time it should really upset you, and of course those are the most hurtful things. The girls and Larry and I all talked about that the other night when we talked about our friendship over all these years. And we talked about the fact that, you know, most of us, first of all, have invaluable respect for each other, what we do, who we are, what kind of people we are. That's one of the reasons we've all stayed close. But the other thing, I think, is the fact that we appreciate the way we feel about each other, our loyalty. We really appreciate our loyalty. And, of course, loyalty is a biggie for me. Shelley and I have talked about this at length on the show and privately. Loyalty is incredibly important. And that's something else you should teach your children when you're talking about being picked on or whether or not they fit in. Choosing friends for yourself that you know you can trust and that have loyalty are the best friends you'll ever have in your life. So let's, I'm already down to 21 minutes, and I want to bring up a couple little things. Shelley and I had a discussion after our talk the other day with Carrie Stearns, the young woman who is so distraught over giving up her baby and at the very, in the 12th hour, trying to get him back and them saying no. And as the story goes, the adoptive parents realized that she was going to do everything she could to get him back, so they surrendered the baby back to the adoption agency. And it's been horrific for Carrie. And I imagine even worse because she goes home and she looks at the children that she loves so dearly and realizes that there's one missing. I know that's where my head would be at, and I'm pretty sure that's where hers is at as well. She struggled a little bit on the show the other day, and she kind of threatened to hang up on me if I was going to give any comparison between herself, the birth mother, and the folks that wanted to adopt her little boy. And that bothered Shelley and I both. And we talked about it a little bit, and we decided we would mention it on the show today, because even though I still support Carrie. That did upset me, but of course, after the fact and talking with Shelley and a couple other members in my family, we realized that she's distraught. And if you listened to the show that day and you took a little bit of offense, because I did get a little bit of feedback from people that are pretty close to me, I think we just need to give her a get-out-of-jail-free card, because I don't think it came from a bad place. It came from stress and anxiety and all the things that happens to us when we feel like somebody is tying our hands behind our back, when we know what we're supposed to do and we can't because of the powers that be. So please keep the positive vibrations going for Carrie and her baby and the rest of her family. And there's a lot of stuff going on out there right now on social media in regard to this case, and I think they've got the attention of a lot of people, and I hope that she resolves this and baby Camden is home where he belongs. But she's put herself in a big glass jar, and everybody's got big lights and magnifying glasses. So let's still keep positive energy going for her. Do you want to say something as well, Shel?
Well, yeah, the only comment I did want to elaborate on what we were trying to talk about with Carrie, and one of the reasons that she reacted is because she's looking at her personal situation. Mm-hmm. And you had made more of a general comment in that adoptive parents can be equally attached to a child just the way a birth parent would. And the reason I say that is because I personally know birth mothers who never bond with their children. They
yep.
have babies, and it's like a litter of puppies to them. They can literally walk away, and they never bond with their children. Even some of these women who raise their children, and you can see there was never any emotional bond. It's bizarre
yep.
to me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen adoptive parents, and I'm going to stay with the mother right now because it's a little bit of a stronger bond. There's a bond with fathers also because you're connected by DNA, so there is a vibrational attachment there, but you actually grow in the mother. So I'm going to stay with mothers for right now, okay? And then I've seen adoptive mothers who had multiple miscarriages or whatever. So when they finally get a baby, they bond instantly. They hold it. I don't care, because Carrie made a comment about it only being 14 days or whatever. You know, the bottom line is, if you are someone who just loves children, who loves babies, and you haven't been successful in having one of your own, and then all of a sudden you get a baby, you're going to bond instantly with that child. And even if it's 14 days or 6 months or 2 years or whatever, it happens almost instantaneously. Just because you're not the biological mother, there is a bond. I mean, hell, somebody brings a puppy home, for God's sake, and then they find out they can't keep it, and it's a traumatic event, you know. I mean, people
mm-hmm.
bond with animals. And here you're
mm-hmm.
talking to another human being that looks at you and that you have a different, you know, energetic connection with. So adoptive mothers absolutely can bond as dearly as the birth mothers. And in some cases, now I'm not talking about Carrie here. Carrie obviously
right.
is very bonded with her child. I'm talking in generalities. There are some cases where the adoptive mother will actually be more bonded with the child than the birth mother. And we've
mm-hmm.
seen both sides
mm-hmm.
of that issue. So that
yes,
was
we
the
have.
Kind of we were making, is that, you know, you can't say as a blanket rule that the birth mother is suffering more than the adoptive mother, because there are situations where that's just not the case. So that's kind
yeah.
of what we were getting at. But because in Carrie's case, she took it personally because that's not her scenario, and that's what we were trying to make the point of, that the adoptive parents that get a baby and have to return it,
mm-hmm.
whether it's in 2 weeks or 6 months or 2 years, it's traumatic for them as well.
Mm-hmm.
There's not only one person that is affected by these type of decisions. The adoptive families are also impacted.
Well, and that's it, and that's the point we were trying to make, and it was never our intention to do anything but support Carrie's dilemma. And I also want to mention that with every saga like this, there's always many sides to every story. And
exactly.
We realize that. And we also realize that there will be people that will judge Carrie and condemn her. Some people will judge her and condone her. Some people will judge her and know that they've walked in those shoes before and want to help her. It will all be different reactions. The point is that as far as I'm concerned, this is my own personal opinion. From me is the fact that if I went someplace like that as a young woman and tried to figure out my dilemma, knew that I was in a place where I didn't know what to do and was searching for answers, I would want somebody to be a lot more counseling than what happened to Carrie. And then when the adoptive parents gave the baby back and said, this baby belongs with his mom, he has health issues, he should be with his mother, and then to have the adoption agency play God goes against everything I believe in. So
right.
I'm not going to probably talk about this anymore unless Carrie needs our help. But if you see it on Facebook and you would like to, sign the petition for change.org and do all those things to help her get enough signatures, we are in complete agreement with that. So, this is all a part of our behavior towards each other. And again, if you're being picked on by somebody else, sometimes the person that's picking on you wants your attention. There's always that side of the coin to look at. If you're an adult, I'm not talking to the 13-year-olds out there. I'm talking to the adults. Sometimes somebody who seems to be, like the old story, you come home and you tell your mom that this kid in sixth grade, this boy in sixth grade won't leave you alone, pulls your hair, does all kinds of things. Your mother tells you, well, he likes you. That's what's going on there. Well, sometimes even in the adult world, that's the truth. Somebody just wants your attention and isn't socially trained well enough to get your attention the right way. So there's a lot of things to think about in relationships and getting along with the rest of our world. I also want to mention to everybody, I debated on doing this, but Anna's Linens and Things, I went to this week to get new curtains for my new home. And I talk all the time about the poor service that we get everywhere. Every place you go, people are, indifferent to you standing there, often don't pay any attention to you, a doctor's office, the DMV, the Walmart, all these different places. I walk into Anna's Linens and Things. I shop there frequently, but I don't really know anybody. I mean, it's not that often. and they were like, I was returning stuff that I bought from another Anna's and because they didn't match. And I walked in, and they're very busy. And the girl says to me, I said, which line do I stand in to do a return? And she goes, oh, I'll call somebody up. I went, oh, thanks. So somebody comes right up, looks at my return, and I said, I want different ones. If I can find them here, you want to just do it that way? And she goes, okay, I'll keep them right here for you. So I shopped. I came back. I walked up, and this girl was busy with someone else, another girl standing there, and she says, oh, are you the lady with the return? I have it right over here. Took my return, took my new purchase, and I was, like, blown away, Shell. I was blown away.
Oh.
By the attention from, like, four women that were standing in this store. And I'm probably standing there with my mouth hanging open because I was getting, like, amazing attention. And the little girl says to me, "You want to fill out this paper? We're having a drawing. We're having a drawing because we're like revamping and everything." And I said, "Well, first of all, I want to say," and I said it loud enough for everybody in the store to hear me, "I have not had this kind of attention, service, and friendliness in 10 years anywhere." And they all applauded. All the workers applauded.
Wow!
And they said, "We're really trying." And I said, "Well, it really, really shows." And I got to tell you, you've made my whole day. So I fill out this little paperwork for a drawing thinking, you know, it'll go in their thing and I'll never hear again. They called me yesterday. I won a $50 gift certificate from Anna's Linens and Things.
I love it.
So I was like, oh, my God, I'm on a roll. Good service. I win $50. I don't know what to do with myself here. So, but I, you know, and they were all, I mean, they all looked at me and smiled, and you could see the pride.
It was genuine,
yeah. You could
yeah.
see the pride, you know. And I was like, wow, I'd like to take a picture of it. But, you know, some people may not even notice it. That's the sad part. But I certainly did. And if anybody that works at Anna's Linens and Things that's listening out there, it blew me away. It made my whole weekend. I love my new drapes. It was just awesome. And sometime today or tomorrow, I'm going to go cash in my $50 gift certificate and buy some more stuff from their store.
So that's awesome.
I just thought that was a nice upbeat story.
It is a nice upbeat story. And, you know, I like some of these shows that are out there, Tabitha Salon Takeover and Bar Rescue, and there's another one, Hotel Impossible and Restaurant Impossible. They're all on different networks, but the formula for the show is the same. People that have an existing business contact these experts that have been in their field for decades and are very, very successful and entrepreneurial, like John Taffer on Bar Rescue has started up over 800 successful bar restaurants in his career. He's been doing this his entire life. So they go into these failing businesses, and they assess them. And in almost every case without fail, one of the biggest problems is a lack of professionalism and attention to their customers. It's like the biggest glaring thing. And they're always so shocked that the owners can't pick up on that themselves. But, you know, customers come in and nobody acknowledges them, and you have four people sitting around talking to each other or texting on their phones, and then they wonder why they don't have any business, you know. And it's such a simple concept. I mean, sometimes there's some technical stuff going on, like if it's a bar and, you know, their bartenders aren't making drinks well, or if it's a restaurant, they're not putting the food out timely. But in most of the cases, the biggest problem across the board is a lack of professionalism and appropriate attention and politeness to the customers, making the customers feel important and in a way that they would want to come back. Usually they're treated so rude and abruptly, or they have to stand around for 4 or 5 minutes before somebody even acknowledges them, and they don't want to come back, you know? And that's one of the things that they always retrain. And then in all these shows, it's like the same thing over and over and over again in these businesses is customer service, customer service, customer service. And it's like it's such a common thread. And so I do think because of these shows, and I think because corporations, big businesses, especially these chains that are all over the country, I think they're starting to realize that you can't get so far, you know, ahead of yourself with marketing and things like that you forget about the personal touch. And I think that's what happened to a lot of conglomerates and chains is that they forgot that personal touch. And you know, you walk into these big stores and you can't ever get anybody. And now I'm starting to see more of that. And it's nice to hear a personal story where there's actually a store where you saw it, you know. But I'm starting to see that a little bit more in other places now where I've touched on that a little bit. I'm starting to see a little bit better customer service in different places that I go.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I'll be honest. I've seen some better things too, but nothing quite as extraordinary as this. I've seen attempts at service, but
yeah, that's a good way.
because some people haven't been properly trained to see what the issue is, you know, or,
right.
or what the service is about. Plus that, you know, so many people are afraid somebody's going to be mean to them, you know, that they try to be mean first, you know, that old,
right.
you know, let me, instead of let me turn the tables and we'll be friends forever, let me turn the tables and I'll be the meanest at this little tete-a-tete that we're having here. You know, I can be a bitch and you can be a bigger bitch, then I can be a bigger bitch, and we'll just walk away so sure that the other person was the biggest bitch. So, and that's often not the truth. So I do think it's about so much about our behavior, Shell, so much about our behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And how we're willing to treat others and how we'll be treated in return. So I want to put out there that I have a young woman that I've been talking with, and she's had major upheaval in her life in the past year and a half, and she removed her children from school and is homeschooling. And, of course, that makes for a very busy life. For those of you who really don't understand the task at hand there, that's a lot of work, keeping a home and homeschooling your children, because there's never any change of venue. There's never any break kind of a thing. And I applaud her. I was hoping she was going to come on the show this morning, and every morning that she's tried, the house has been too noisy. She's afraid she won't be able to pay attention. So I want to say to her, because I think she'll listen to the show on my Facebook page later today, that you're not standing by yourself. There's a lot of women out there who have done what you're doing now, and there are people you can talk to, and you do need to figure out a way, even if it's at 11 o'clock at night after everybody falls asleep, to have some time for yourself. And babysitters, I know, can be expensive, and if you're in a place where there's no money, there are babysitters like the movies. Your kids are a little bit older. You can take them to the movies and then go sit someplace and just have a hot cup of tea all by yourself and just think about how hot the tea is. Don't think about anything else. Give yourself a break. It's imperative. You're doing a hell of a job, a job a lot of people couldn't do. So also, you know, accept some pride for yourself, because your kids are what are the most important thing to you, obviously. Otherwise, you wouldn't be doing what you're doing. So I applaud you, for one. And I think a lot of other people will do so as well. So don't give up the ship, and you can call us and talk to us anytime, and you can call me privately, whatever you need to do. I put that offer out there for anybody who's listening who needs an ear. I do want to mention before we're completely out of time, we are going to talk this week about The Great Houdini, who I found to be, the movie was so-so. It was good. I like Adrian Brody. I think he's a good actor and everything. But I found out so many interesting facts about him. So we're going to share that this week. And I want to leave you all with the thought. Minimum wages around the world. Denmark, $21 an hour. Australia, $15.81 an hour. Germany, $11 an hour. France, $12.35 an hour. The United States of America, $7.25 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
We need to talk about this. I don't know if we can make any changes, but we definitely need to help people talk through this and come to some kind of an understanding. And maybe if we combine our efforts, we can make a change in that. So that's horrific.
60 seconds.
So everybody go out today and have a great day. And as I said, tomorrow we're going to talk about The Great Houdini. And I think it'll be fun, because some of the things I found out about him, he was a spy. I never knew that until I watched the movie.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. I saw a little bit of the movie. I didn't watch the whole thing. It was like a two-parter. But what might be fun for people to do is, I think it's the History Channel. I'm pretty sure that's where I saw it. The History Channel, actually, you can go on the historychannel.com And they have a Houdini survey that you can take right now, like a quiz, not a survey, a quiz, the Houdini quiz. And they say it's for, you know, see how much you really know about him. So if any of our listeners want to check it out before the show tomorrow, I'm actually going to go on there later. And actually take a quiz and see if you really know a lot about him. And then obviously they give you the answers at the end. So I'm going to be doing that a little bit later on this morning in preparation for tomorrow's show.
Cool. That'll be fun. All right, everybody, go out and have a great day. God bless, and we'll be back tomorrow. Bye-bye. Bye, honey. See you later.
Bye, Reen. Talk to everyone in the morning. Have a great day.